Dixon is a senior risk manager for Aon Insurance. Are we starting? We should be, right? Yeah. Yeah, we're on time. We're on time, Nancy. Okay. So, Nancy, yeah, we're actually here at the Keck Centre and beaming you also live to EMS Today in Baltimore at the Convention Centre. And by way of introduction, I've known Nancy for some time. She's a senior risk manager at Aon Insurers and has a very keen understanding of systems issues in fleet management and from many dimensions, and has actually been incredibly supportive to some of the challenges we've had in trying to understand how to translate best practices from general fleets into the EMS fleet. Today, Nancy's going to be speaking with us on an up-and-coming and increasingly interesting area of risk and hazard. I think your microphone just fell over. An increasing area of risk and hazard, the impaired, distracted driver, and the issues of hours of service. Just before Nancy starts, you know, it was an interesting discussion that we had, what are the regulations of hours of service for EMS operators? And whilst it might be a very strict situation with aviation, EMS and air medical, one as far as the pilots go, but when it comes to operational performance, hours of service is something that may be more specific to more commercial fleets. So, Nancy, it's all yours.
All right, next slide. All right. As she said, I'm Nancy Bendixson, and I work for Aon Risk Solutions as a safety consultant for them. As Nadine said, I've worked with her for a number of years. It may not be 100% immersed in all of EMS, but I'm trying to apply what I know from a fleet safety management standpoint to EMS operations. I have a couple of clients that are EMS groups, and anyway, so let's get going on this. I've been asked to speak on impaired, distracted driving, and hours of service. Next. Some of the things that I'm going to be talking about more specifically are when I think about impaired or, you know, types of drivers out there, I think of driver fitness. So we'll give you some information on, say, what we think about, what I would recommend from a background check, driver selection. Basically, when we're thinking about driver fitness, we're trying to make sure that we're ruling out unfit drivers. Impairment. We have to think about it's not just the drugs and alcohol, but there can be a lot of other factors, the fatigue or distraction. Hours of service, we need to learn from the folks at other, you know, the federal agencies, the Federal Railroad Administration, there's the Transit Administration, Department of Transport, and for Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Also, I'm going to be speaking a little bit, or quite a bit of time on distracted driving. Really have to think about that focus on the driving task. Next. All right, I alluded to this. Driver fitness. This is a category that FMCSA has established for the comprehensive safety accountability changes that have been made in how they evaluate motor carriers. I think it's very valid to your operations, too. Basically, we want you to be thinking about from the driver, what kind of license do they have? Is it valid for the type of vehicle they're operating? Is it current? Medical qualifications, are there some concerns with health? From a commercial vehicle driver, they have to have, they have to pass a DOT physical. And then that would bring up, say, if we find there's diabetes, high blood pressure, vision problems, all those types of things, that would then restrict that person's ability to operate that vehicle. The larger vehicle, something that's over 26,001 pounds, and many of our, you know, like from an FAA standpoint, from the standpoint of transit, railway, they all have drug and alcohol testing types of processes in place. I'm not sure what kind of things you have in place available from an EMS standpoint. Fatigue, it is a known impact on our driving skills. Next. So what are some signs of an impaired driver? We all are pretty familiar with the alcohol or drug-impaired driver. They have the slow reactions, the blurred vision, impaired judgment, reduced ability to gauge distance. And what I have found very interesting is those similar types of characteristics also apply to those drivers that have fatigue, and we can put distracted driver right in that same category. There's reduced concentration, slower reactions, they drift in the lane, they are having trouble focusing. You know, that really applies a lot to a very fatigued driver, tailgating. They just, when people are texting, when they're fatigued, they are not aware of what's going on around them. And I'm sure we've all seen that vehicle drifting into our lane, just doing some really maybe going 40 miles an hour in a lane that's 65 miles an hour. We don't want to have those kinds of situations when we are entrusting the care of a patient to that driver of that EMS vehicle. So this is something that, you know, we really, I think, from an EMS service standpoint, is an important thing to be considering next. I wanted to focus on distracted driving. This is a huge initiative within all agencies of the Department of Transportation. There's been many regulations implemented from a commercial vehicle standpoint and the transit as far as use of a handheld cell phone. A commercial driver cannot be using a handheld cell phone. There's restrictions on texting as well. There should be. But we're getting more and more regulations. We're getting National Highway Traffic Safety Administration involved with trying to think about what are some limits that should be placed on what is available as far as in the cab of a vehicle. So let's talk about what is the definition of distracted driving. I'm sure you've all seen this, but basically it means any activity that could divert a person's attention away from the primary task of driving. It is more than texting. It is more than the use of a handheld cell phone. We have some of the regulations, they're focused on that because I think that's something they can try and measure. But recognize it could be talking to a passenger, reaching for something, eating, all those types of things that cause us, adjusting the climate controls, running the GPS. These are all things that cause us not to be focused on driving. What are some effects from a cell phone use? Is it can delay your reaction time. And there's been new studies out now that are demonstrating that that delayed reaction time is very nearly the same as if you had a 0.08 blood alcohol concentration. Other studies have confirmed that using that handheld phone can increase your crash chances by 4 times. And the texting, of course, can cause us to have 23 times the risk for a crash. Next. When we think about distractions, there's been different categories given to this. So let's talk about these. Visual. This is the one that takes your eyes off the road. Say if you're reading the text, if you're looking for a piece of paper or something in the cab of your vehicle, cognitive. This is when your mind is not on the task of driving, manual. This was what takes your hands off the wheel. Auditory takes your focus off the road. So when you're talking to somebody on the phone, you're not going to be as alert as you might have been. So when we think about texting, what makes it so bad, it does involve the visual. It does involve the manual. It definitely probably involves the cognitive, too. It doesn't involve the auditory. But we think about the number of drivers out there where texting is just commonplace for them to be doing. I think of the younger population. People don't, I have a daughter that's in her 20s. She does not use the minutes from a voice standpoint. It's all texting. And it's just so commonplace. That's how they communicate. And it's really going to be a hard behavior change for us to be able to address because it's just so commonplace. But it is a very deadly thing that is going on there with texting. And that is why there is so much emphasis on texting. So let's think about with tasks that that can be a driving distraction, think about it's going to fit more in more than one category next. This was a study done by Virginia. There's a transportation group, and they found that these were the different types of tasks that are going on when people are using an electronic device or they're distracted. So they were measuring, they looked at the odds, the frequency, the column that I think is of greatest interest is mean eyes off forward road time. In other words, the time that you're not looking down the road. So a text message, and you're reading that text message, 4.6 seconds. Interact or look at a dispatch device, again, over 4 seconds. Writing on a pad, 4.2. Using the calculator. You know, all of these things, we think about how many feet we can travel in those few seconds. So that's why it is critical to think about some non-driving tasks that people are performing and the impact it has on the vehicles around us. Next. So this is just showing that on average at 55 miles per hour in that 3 to 4 seconds, you can travel just about the length of a football field, and there's a lot of things that can happen when you're on the roadway and you're not aware of what's going on around you. So that's basically just all this is depicting there. Next. Nadine had, I saw her slides. I didn't hear the audio because I was working or doing this, watching the webinar remotely. But she had talked a lot about some of the DOT hours of rules. They've established them for a number of different agencies that they govern. But basically the idea behind this is they want to limit the potential for fatigue when people are operating things like airplanes, trains, trucks. And so they've established some limits for on-duty hours. Basically, another, you know, what is a big part of that is thinking about, you know, what's some rest time that people need so that they can be fresh. Within the Federal Railroad Administration, if you work 8 hours on duty or less than 12, a minimum of 8 hours, and if on duty less than 12 hours, then you would need to have that 8 hours of, I'm sorry, I'm going to skip, 12 hours, less than 12 hours on duty, then you need 8 hours off. If you work over 12 hours, then you need to have that 10 hours off duty. With a commercial truck driver, they could drive up to 11 hours, be on duty, a total of 14 hours, which could be things like doing inspections, paperwork. But then they need that minimum of 10 hours off. Some other limits that they put on, a commercial airline pilot can fly no more than 100 hours a month. A truck driver can be on duty up to about 260 hours per month. Shipboard personnel at sea can't operate more than 360 hours per month, or if they're when they're in port, only 270 hours. Locomotive engineers could technically operate a train up to 432 hours per month, which equals about 14 hours a day for each of those 30 days. So there's varying limits, and I know the FRA is taking a look at, they're doing some studies from a fatigue management standpoint for railroad personnel, trying to evaluate, is that a proper amount of time? Within the commercial truck driving world, they can work a maximum of 60 to 70 hours weekly. And we typically would want to make sure that they have that 10 hours off duty. And so basically with this whole hours of service is the idea behind is that we're managing our drivers so we don't put fatigued drivers on the road. So it's something that it's not a standard within your group, within the EMS services, but maybe it's something that needs to be looked at. And you look at the multiple shifts and the, you know, the potential for the body rhythms to be interrupted by the shift work and things. And that can also be a contributor to fatigue factor. Next. So in summary, basically from a system standpoint, think about within your EMS operation, what do you have in place? What's your level of fleet safety systems with regard to the fatigue management? What do you do from a driver fitness? Do you have some distracted driving processes in place? You know, we really need to make sure that emphasis on that driver, you know, that is that they are operating that vehicle. They cannot be inputting into a GPS. They should not be using the cell phone, all these types of things, other types of telematics that they might have available to them. We need to have them be thinking about driving as a complex task. We do many, many computations, many, many decisions within that mile that we drive, and we need to make sure that that person operating the EMS vehicle for you is focused on driving. And that needs to come from management on down, that we, you know, if we have cell phone policies, if we have distracted driving, it needs to be something that is demonstrated, that we're enforcing, that we're encouraging and ongoing. So think about what is the strategies. We need to make sure that we provide the same focus on fleet safety as we do to patient and employee safety. We can't have it because we need that vehicle to get us to where we can respond and work with that injured patient and get that patient transport done. And so we need to make sure that people understand the importance of fleet safety in order to accomplish the other jobs there. And then finally, from the solutions, you know, how do we evaluate where you are? You need to maybe do some audits, kind of evaluate across your service. Do you have the same types of safety systems in place with regard to an operation in one city? Is it the same in another across the town, in the next county where all your services are? So what are your processes there? How do we address behavior change? We do that with perception surveys. I saw there was some information presented on that earlier. This can be a good way to truly open management eyes as to what is the thinking out there, what is the impression that our safety processes have. Then we need to make sure that we're doing good education and think about, are there ways that we can use technology to improve the overall fleet safety?
Nancy, thank you. This is our fleet management strategy section. A question came across for you regarding mobile data terminals in many of our vehicles and your impression of safety of operations. Nadine, can you throw that to her?
Yeah. Nancy, this is a question that came through actually over on the smartphone SMS from somebody who's watching you live in Baltimore. And the question is about the terminals, the data terminals in the front cab. I think we've discussed the case before where there was the a person who was a paramedic who was in the vehicle but was not driving, who was not interacting with the data terminal, but the driver was. What are your thoughts about policies and procedures about who should be interacting with the data terminals in the vehicle?
Well, I think my thoughts are that, yes, we have that data terminal, but I think we need to be inputting that data before we have the vehicle in motion. If we need to be doing something while the vehicle is in motion, preferably it is something that the driver, the person behind the wheel, should not be doing. We should have their coworker be inputting that. I don't know if there's anything that can be done from a voice command versus having to hand, key in type of information. I'm just not that familiar with that terminal. But my thoughts are, if there's anything you can do to get the information loaded in there before you're moving down the road, that would be the preferred method.
I think it highlights an area where designing the system around safety rather than having a system and then trying to make it safe, it clearly, I think, would be leaning towards our human factors and engineering colleagues to ensure that the system design is such that it's easy to operate by the person who's not driving the vehicle. I think that's where we're coming from there.
both a distraction there process-wise. I can't help but think our most active vehicles in the fleet are the battalion chiefs and EMS supervisors. They've pulled away the drivers from a number of our battalion chiefs. So these are people who are driving to scenes, the highest priority scenes. They're typically on the radio. They're typically having to navigate traffic. They're typically having to think through the incident scene or call up pre-plans. And then they are often on the phone at the same time because somebody else is calling them on the phone. So we have a number of reasons why even our highest level people would be lousy supervisors of this process for the street level people. I also
if nothing else, they could be make sure that they're hands free when they are talking on the phone. You know, that would be one measure of
there you go.
Of control there
you go.
There, but it is tough. And you know, you'll think about police. You know, public safety officers. They have a computer right next to them. You know. And they're inputting, they're looking, they're checking, you know. So it is a real concern.
And another concern, we put the mobile data terminals in our vehicles. They're not part of a safety design. I don't know how many officers, police officers in particular, I have dealt with who have been injured by the terminal itself. And then we had even a fire officer. The mobile data terminal was in front of the officer. The impact he saw coming, put his hands forward, and the data terminal almost amputated his digits. And as airbags deploy, the airbags push the data terminals towards the people here. We've got to go to a different design. So, Nancy, thank you. We appreciate your input.
All right,
we'll let you go.
Thank you.
Our next speaker, since we switched positions, will be Nadine. And since we're going to talk about telematics, Nadine's going to lead the topic of predictive and telematics technologies.
Well, thank you, everybody. And, you know, Nancy, that's a very interesting topic. We actually had some discussion at the Society for Automotive Engineers Top Tech in 2001, September 11th, 2001, on that very issue of police vehicles and how to best get their communications equipment in those vehicles so that it didn't cause them any harm or injury. So there is a small body of work on that. Okay, a lot's now possible and a lot's possible for less. We can look at driver behaviour, vehicle behaviour, roadside intelligent transportation systems, fuel consumption economics and resource modelling in ways we never could look at before. And very cost-effectively. There are now very impressive deployment technology tools, in-vehicle telematics. I've had to learn the word telematics. Telematics is some sort of technology that lives in some part of the vehicle that's connected to it that captures data. And there's things called OBD2s and all sorts of ways it does that. There are other telematics that are actually in smartphones, and My smartphone actually has a fleet management system in it that maps where I go from a database in the United Kingdom. So, well, maybe we don't need to worry about any sort of distraction from terminals in our vehicles because they're telling us that our next car will drive itself. And so it may well be by the time we get the solution sorted out to driver distraction, we won't need the solution, because it will be considered archaic to actually drive a vehicle. And for those of you who read Wired, and I strongly recommend anyone over the age of 44 should read Wired so you know what's going on in the world around you. I read Wired more religiously than medical journals now because I have no idea what's happening in that space if I don't read it. This is an article written by Tom Vanderbilt, who was the keynote speaker at a couple of recent automotive meetings. He's a journalist, and he wrote the book called Traffic. But just as we said when I opened this morning, the world is changing around us, and it's changing rapidly. This world is changing very rapidly. So what's out there? Well, there's integrated systems with mapping and safety and economy. There's systems that help you deploy your vehicles. There's driver management systems that help you manage your drivers, and there's systems that know what your vehicle's doing at all times. Now, you're going to hear some presentations from the end users of some of these systems, but I thought I'd just throw some of it out there. This is not an all-inclusive list. I'm sure there are plenty of technologies out there that I haven't touched on, and there's one technology I'm going to touch on that's not on that list because it's a very unusual technology. But there are technologies such as the new technology, Aztec Ferno technology, that is a very comprehensive technology, and there's going to be someone speaking about that. But it will do all sorts of things, from mapping where your vehicle is, what it's doing, the economy of your fuel consumption, manage all your peripheral pieces, and you'll hear about that in just a moment. There's another technology out there called Fleet Eyes, which we're actually going to have a comprehensive presentation on, but that won't be happening today. But we're going to hear a little couple of words about Fleet Eyes from our colleagues in Florida shortly. Then there's the products from Zoll Rescue Net, who took over the Road Safety Inc. product, and they have a fleet of systems that do a number of fleet management programs, driver safety programs. Then there's another predictive modelling system, which you'll hear about this afternoon, called Marvelous. Then there's a piece of technology I have a little familiarity with because I've used it, called Telematicus, which is actually one of those technologies that realises the hardware is going to be obsolete, so focus on the software. So this is a software-driven program. You can run it off your smartphone, and my smartphone knows how fast I'm doing, and they get pretty upset with me because every now and then I leave it on an aeroplane, and they say, "God, you did 800 miles per hour." So I actually have the speed record in the Telematicus system worldwide. There are other systems. The Optima system is a system I'm going to run through in a little more detail, and there's some systems from Northrop Grumman. So I just wanted to put them all in one place so that when we just talk about them, they'll make some sense. So this is the Aztec Ferno website there, and this is sort of what some of the product looks like. Clearly, this is not going to be a comprehensive view of what these products do, but this is designed around the emergency medical services infrastructure and is targeted to that industry. Fleet Eyes, this is their website. You're going to be hearing more about them. They also have a product that, as you can see from that image, has an interface on multiple handheld platforms and also GPS. Zoll Systems have taken on the product from Road Safety Inc. that was developed by Larry Selditz, who passed away recently. And this is the Telematicus product, which integrates not only safety but also efficiency and environmental issues, environmental impact. Safety should sell, but it really doesn't. Even if it's going to save lives, time and money, if you just offer something that's going to save fuel, people are going to want to take it ahead of something that's just safety. Safety doesn't really sell like it should. It should sell. And this has a similar interface that looks sort of like that. And then there's the Optoma product, which is a product that I think comes out of New Zealand. And it's a demand resource analysis and modelling and base location planning tool. And Northrop Grumman have another product that's used, I think, in the UK, which they use it more for computer-aided dispatch. And here's some shots of the Marvelous system, generically, that you're going to hear more about in just a moment. And there's some other shots of that. And then there's programs like Priority Dispatch we're all very familiar with that are primarily dispatch products. And this is one of the products, actually, Ronald Rolfson mentioned to me, that's used in the Norwegian countries as one of their police and rescue fleet management solutions that really is more a dispatch model. They don't actually have a driver feedback system that they're using. In the interest of time and wanting you to hear about everybody else and using their product rather than what I've got to say, I did want to talk to you about this because this is a bit of an unusual one. This isn't really what is a fleet management tool in the same context as these others. This is really integrating. It's called 911 ETA, and it's a GPS-based emergency and traffic alert system. And what this does is this sort of integrates the three emergency services as well as the public. So it will give you an alert saying there's an ambulance on your right-hand side, or there's an ambulance coming from behind you, or there's an ambulance coming at you, or a fire truck coming at you, or a police car. It gives you the sort of civilian driver some information. Rather than just hearing a screaming noise and getting disoriented, it gives you some additional information. So it alerts the public in the vicinity of a responding emergency vehicle. Motorists can be alerted on their smartphones or an in-dash navigational system. It's just being deployed in its first location right now. And I just thought this was an interesting model that you may not have heard of, and I wanted this to be an opportunity to present what's out there. It actually takes the exact location of responding police, fire and EMS, but apparently it's got a little thing in it, so that if the policeman's chasing you, it doesn't tell you. So cool. I think they've thought of a lot of angles here. But anyway, well, and really, one of the features is, and you know, we've seen plenty of situations where emergency vehicles, police, fire and EMS all going to the same event but coming from different sectors. And so what can happen is that the police can run into the EMS or the EMS can run into fire, and we've all seen that happen often enough because it's a predictable situation. So it also has some capacity to improve emergency vehicles' response times and minimise crashes. This is sort of a model of how it looks on your smartphone, and it actually shows you a picture of whether it's a fire truck or a police car or an ambulance in your vicinity. Maybe that's a distraction. But I just thought, in the interests of just trying to bring as much information in the sort of realm forwards, and this is something that maybe you might not have seen. So there's a spectrum of dimensions. Sure, there's the CAD that we know, there's resource allocation, fleet performance, monitoring a whole system so management can see what's going on with their vehicles, or direct driver feedback. And all the systems that have direct real-time driver feedback have been associated with very sustained permanent safety advantage, and you're going to be hearing about some of that. And then this other system of public alerts. So I just didn't want to take too much time because I want you to listen to people who are using these systems. If you want to know a little more about the public alert system, because it's a little unusual, I managed to convince somebody to come here to talk to you. He'll be at EMS today, Thursday, Friday, but Juan is here in the audience and he's happy to explain more about how that works. So, read Wired. Okay, that's it. I'm done.
Thanks, Nadine. Our next speaker is Triumvirate to talk about fleet safety systems and putting in-vehicle telematics to use. Our first speaker will be Ron Thackeray, Senior Vice President, EMSC.
Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate having the opportunity to join all of you today and all of you online. I work with American Medical Response, so that's really my experience on the ambulance side. So I thought we'd talk for a little bit today about a number of fleet safety solutions that are out there that I'm familiar with, and just provide a little bit of an update, perhaps some education. So if we could move to the next slide. The clicker.
Point it down at your feet. Towards your feet.
Yeah. Like the engineer.
Yeah. I got you. Aha. Uh-huh. So the first system, and this is one that I believe Charlene's going to go into more detail on in a few moments, is a system that Nadine just mentioned called Road Safety. This company was recently bought by Zoll, has a new name for this product. This is something that's been around EMS for quite a number of years. It's actually a system that is specifically designed for EMS operators. It has a lot of different features that are used by EMS operators. It has a number of input systems so that you can tie to many outputs from the vehicle. It has an accelerometer on it so that it'll measure forces forward, backward, cornering, and it is a threshold driven. Now, one of the things that I think is most important about this system is that it is a behavior modification system. There are user-defined thresholds, whether they be for speed, whether they be for use of red lights and sirens, for cornering, any of those things. And as you approach that threshold, you get a growling noise as the driver, which tells you you're about to do something that I told you not to do. And if you back off, the growling noise stops and the incident is not noted. So either you get the growling noise and your behavior changes, or if you continue in that direction, you get a tone, it gets noted. There's a fairly extensive reporting methodology. Since we use it in a number of locations, we worked with them to produce this kind of a roll-up report where I can look at a number of operations that we have throughout the country. I can then click on Colorado Springs, and it'll take me down to specific driver detail there. The next series of programs that I'm going to talk about, one of those that we've implemented and a lot of people also use in EMS and other fleet operations, is an 800 House My Driving program. As an EMS operator, that's a solution that you can implement on your own pretty easily. What it takes is buying decals. You already buy decals to put on the side of your rigs. You have a dispatch center. And so you buy an 800 line, run that into your dispatch center, assign a unique identifier to all of your rigs, and then you have not a onboard monitoring system like the fleet or the road safety, but you have a public monitoring system. And so we've seen success with this. Our Riverside, California operation implemented that a couple of years. Within about 6 months, they drove their collision rate down by about 50%. Easy solution, great idea. Down below that, there are a number of camera systems that are out on the market today. DriveCam has been in the market probably the longest. Smart Drive is out there, a new company called iDrive. And those are basically threshold driven, again, off of an accelerometer. They don't have as many input feeds as a road safety have because they're only taking information based upon motion of that vehicle. You exceed a threshold, there's usually a defined amount of video that is kept out of the loop that keeps running, whether it's 10 seconds before and 20 seconds after, 15 before and 15 after. You decide with the company that you buy that service on for what you want to keep. Some of those companies have you review the video your own. Others have migrated to a service model where they review that video and then they come to you and say, you need to look at this one and this one and this one. And so they're able to provide a part of the management service on those. There's a picture below the DriveCam logo there of a system that's called Digital Ally out of the Kansas City area. It really grew up in the police cruiser market, but is now trying to move into EMS. One of the features that it has, and you have to look at that picture somewhat carefully, and actually, is within that rear view mirror, you actually get the image that's being seen on that camera. So if you put side cameras on your vehicle and you turn your right blinker on, then it'll activate that camera and you can see if there are vehicles in your blind spot through your rear view mirror. If you put your vehicle into reverse, then your backup camera will come on and you'll be able to see behind your vehicle there. They need to develop their software, or they need to develop their reporting systems better for EMS, but extensively used in the police markets. The last one is a concept ambulance that we have. You may remember John Colleen, who presented here a few years ago. One of the things that we learned from him was the importance of contour marking on vehicles. So you can see a photo of our vehicle at night. It has a 1-inch wide reflective white stripe around the vehicle because John educated us that at night, when somebody's lights shine on your vehicle, they need to be able to tell the size of the vehicle, they need to be able to tell the direction of the vehicle, and they need to be able to tell whether that vehicle is moving. And so if you look at that photo, you can see the size of the vehicle, the box behind it, as well as the cab. You can tell by the position of the cab the direction that the vehicle is headed. And if you look at the vertical line at the back of the box, as well as the vertical line at the front of the box, right behind the cab, those two vertical lines, if your vehicle is moving, you'll see those two vertical lines moving, which tells you that the vehicle is in motion and which direction it is headed. On the innovation side, and I wanted to spend a bit of time because I often claim that, much as Nadine showed us earlier, that that the real key in all of these systems hasn't yet arrived in EMS, and that is they're going to be systems that avoid collisions altogether. These are some of the Mercedes systems that are out there with detection. In the top left picture, that is a system that they have that I believe they call Distronic. What it does is as the vehicle is moving down the road, it is sending out signals to look for the vehicles that are ahead of you, and it's measuring your distance away from those vehicles as you proceed down the road. If there is a significant change in distance, that is the distance is lowered, it will automatically apply the brakes on your vehicle to 40% of their capacity and give you an audible alert. Once the driver of that vehicle applies the brakes, they will activate at 100%. So you'll immediately bring that vehicle under control in order to avoid that rear-end collision. At the bottom of the slide is a picture of their service that allows you to detect vehicles in other lanes. So while you're driving down the road, if it detects somebody in the left lane, that red car that you see, then you'll get a little red light in your left side mirror. And that is to tell you that there's a vehicle there. If you activate your turning left blinker, then you'll get an audible alert that there's a vehicle in that blind spot. And so that's other technology. Finally, they have what they call attention assist, and this is somewhat remarkable, and that is when you hop in the vehicle and begin to drive, it is paying attention to all of the things that you're doing while you're driving, what you're doing to maintain your speed, how you accelerate, the kind of turning motions that you're making with that vehicle, so that if you become fatigued and begin to drift and correct and drift and correct, it'll know that that's unusual for you, and so you'll get an audible alarm and you'll get this little note near your speedometer telling you that it's time for you to take a break. Interesting technology.
Speaking of a break.
Speaking of a break, I'm done. Okay, I just have two other things. ACE Tech is one I think that people will talk about. I'm not as well versed. But on the cell phone issue and the MDT issue that we were talking about before, there are technologies that will disable those mobile data terminals once your vehicle starts to move. And those are the kinds of technologies that I think we need to look for in that regard. One of the other things that we've been looking for is how do we control cell phone use for the people who are driving our vehicles, because they tend to be just like that Generation Y guy that Nadine showed earlier in her slide. And none of the technologies that you see here are necessarily good at that. The camera systems can detect it if something else happens and the person happens to be on the phone. Road safety isn't able to do it. These systems that they have. There are technologies available today. However, they are typically applications that you have to load onto the phone, which then detect whether there's movement and then block the use of that cell phone. Our challenge in our company is we don't issue cell phones to all the people that drive our vehicles. And so we aren't certain that if we loaded them onto all of our employees' personal cell phones, that those applications would remain. So with that, I will turn the podium over to Charlene Cobb from Sunstar Paramedics in Largo, Florida. Thank you, Jim.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Nadine called me a few weeks ago and asked me if I could speak a little bit on the new technologies that we're using at Sunstar. So you're going to see a system perspective on what we're doing there in Florida. And this is a picture of our fleet because I like to show it off. basically, the first topic is going to be Marvelous System. And I'm sure a lot of you in the room are using the Marvelous System. But We like to think of it as a front-end technology. It's a tool that we use when dispatching the right truck to the right location. A little bit about Marvelous. Prior to it, we used to use history and geography to determine where we were going to put our trucks. And we used to put all of our trucks in central locations and hope that we could make it to the call in time. It wasn't very efficient for us. And so when we bought Marvelous, we had about 10 years worth of data that we already had stored that we were able to upload into the machine itself. And then Marvelous started collecting data as well. So over about a 17-year period, Marvelous was able to determine where in Pinellas County the next call was going to come in at. Marvelous uses this data and the data it's been collecting to forecast, much like a weather report. It looks like storms, basically, over Pinellas County. It can forecast where the storms are going to be for every hour of the day. Red, obviously, being the highest volume. Yellow, not quite so heavy. The green, again, a little bit lighter. And then we can use our dispatch personnel to determine where we should be placing our units at based on the software that we've got with Marvelous. So how we utilize Marvelous in our system at Sunstar, you can see that we determine where to place the apparatus. The darker purple areas are the area that has the greatest coverage at the time. So the purple is actually a blue overlay that goes over the mapping system. You'll see that the red zones are hot, and we've got a truck there to cover it. So instead of it being red, it's going to turn into a dark purple color instead. We can take this into consideration when we're moving trucks as well. If we see that there's an area that a call just came in and now it's uncovered, we'll make sure that we route a truck through that area to provide coverage for it as they're going into another area, another service area. We may also move the trucks closer to fill the gaps. A little bit of a background on Sunstar, and probably most of you have the same issues. We're fined according to late calls. If we have an emergency call that we're late on, we pay $7 a minute for every minute that we're over on that late call. With the non-emergency calls, we're fined $3 a minute for those. So it's really important for us to make sure that we're on time. When we first came into the system in 2004, we were running at approximately 89% to 90% efficiency. Through Marvelous, we were able to bring that up to approximately 94% to 95%. Our contract is 92%. That's where we need to be in order to not be fined. We also have a problem with the fact that we have fire districts that we have to responsible to as well. So once again, we can't just take all of the trucks and put them in those high call volume areas. We have to be responsible to the outliers as well, such as our beaches, to make sure that we are compliant in those areas at 92%. We evaluate our post plan every 6 months to see if there's any changes that we need to make. And we might make changes sooner depending on things like road closures and things like that. As you can see in the next slide, this is called a dynamic service area, and it's an area that a single truck can get to within 6 to 8 minutes. Even though we have a 10-minute contract obligation, we realize that there's out-of-chute problems in getting the trucks to the calls on time. So we actually give ourselves that 2-minute buffer period to make sure that our trucks are getting there on time. Let's see. It's not a true actual radius that an ambulance would cover, where they're in the middle of the circle and then they're able to respond to this area in 10 minutes. Again, it's more dynamic. It might have a different shape to it. And it takes into account things like dead ends, traffic patterns, time of day, geography, and waterways as well. So we're able to see all of these things and determine where the best place is to put our ambulance based on, again, the software and the data that's in it from the past 17 years. So Marvelous has changed the way that we've done business in Pinellas County. Before, we used to have more trucks on the road and we were less efficient. And obviously now with Marvelous, we don't have to have as many resources on the road and we're much more efficient without all of those resources. The next thing that I'm going to be talking to you about is FleetEyes, and we consider that a back-end technology. Once the ambulance is en route, it's helping to complete the task. It's helping the dispatcher to get the ambulance there safely. And this also deals a lot with safety, and that's what this is obviously all about. So FleetEyes functionality, what it does is it does things like it helps us determine weather, traffic, routing, speed, tracking of the truck and area resources. And I'm going to talk a little bit about on each one of those. Some of the things that we like about it is that it can give us the weather report. So where that arrow is up there, you can see that those green spots are storms actually moving into the area. And we can blow up our map that we can tell exactly what street it's raining on and what street it's not raining on. So when a crew is going to a call, we can let them know, you know, by the way, if you're going to take alternate 19 up, you're going to see a lot of heavy weather on that road. You might want to switch over to another road to get there. It's kind of like keeping a watch over our flock as well. Also, it helps with traffic. The roads on Fleet Eyes will actually turn different colors. And I don't have that picture up here, unfortunately. But if it's a high traffic road, a lot of traffic, just as much like your Garmin's or those types of machinery, it'll show a red road that is high volume, high traffic at that time. Yellow, a little bit better. And green is a great road for you to be on. It can also show us what speed our truck is traveling at so that we, in real time. Now, with products like Road Safety, we can look at it retrospectively. But with Fleet Eyes, we can actually pull up that truck at that moment and see that they're going 75 miles an hour in a 46-mile-an-hour zone. So we can actually talk to them at that moment and say, you know, or send them a little message and say, you're going over the speed here and you really need to rein it in a little bit. We can use it to track our out-of-town transports, which is really terrific for us because if we're taking a call up to Atlanta, Georgia, for instance, we have the crew check in with us every 30 minutes on the radio just to let us know that they're safe and they're okay on the way up and the way back. But we can pull them up and actually watch their trip and what roads they're on in case they run into any problems. If they run into a problem such as their patient starts to crash or their truck breaks down, we can hover over that unit and then pull up Google, and it will tell us all of the resources that are around that truck at that time, what the closest hospital is, who the police department is, what their phone number is, what the fire department is that's there. If we needed another ambulance to come over and take control of the patient, we could actually have our dispatcher call that ambulance company and tell them their our exact location for them to get there. It also tells us things like the gas stations in case we're having a problem with that. So quite often, it's really helpful on the out-of-towners as well. I was listening before to somebody talking about geofencing. Geofencing is new technology, which is quite neat, and Fleet Eyes uses this as well. Geofencing, we can actually determine perimeters around certain locations. And once our truck passes through that geofence or that perimeter, it'll tell us that that truck is there or our truck is leaving it. So, for instance, if our truck is not in a post-proper area, because we do system status management where our trucks sit basically on street corners, if our employee decides to leave that area, we'll know it, that they're leaving post-proper, which is a half mile in either direction. We also can tell if a crew isn't responding to us on the radio and we need to get law enforcement out there to make sure that they're okay or maybe they're just sleeping or something. We actually can see their exact location. We can see what parking place they're in at that location. So a lot of times, we tell our crews during orientation, we can see whether you're parked in front of or behind the Walmart. We'll find you there. So this is a really neat technology. It also helps us with when the crews are arriving at the hospital. Sometimes they've got a very sick patient. They forget to put themselves on scene and or at hospital at destination, and that causes us to have fines. So by having the geofence set up around the hospital, it actually will put them at the hospital at the destination for us. So that's a pretty neat feature to it as well. One of the other things that we use it for as well with Google Earth is route review. We have a process that we do every day called pulse process where we look at all of our late calls and we determine what the reason was that we were late and we try to learn from it and get better from it. So every day for every late call that we have, we pull it up on the mapping system and we look at the route that they took and each one of these bubbles, if we were to click on it, we could determine which speed they were going at the time. So if they were really trying to make the call or if they maybe hit traffic or what the problem is, we know that we need to investigate the call a little bit more in depth if we see that something is amiss there in Google Bubbles. We can see real-time traffic. We use this in real-time traffic as well. And you can watch the truck going down the road and when they arrive at destination or if they're having any problems. This will also show us the traffic on the roads as well, if it's a yellow, green, or red road for us. Yes. Okay. I got a few more slides. Call data. We can see that you can put a truck up on the screen, hover over it, and it'll get us all the information about it. And then talking about road safety, Ron was talking about it a little bit earlier. We use this as retrospective technology. We use it for investigations. If we see that we've had an accident, we can see how fast our unit was going. We can see whether or not they had their emergency lights and sirens on by the bottom graph here. And we can determine whether or not they were driving aggressively by the G-forces. We use our monthly driver reports to identify high-risk behaviors, as Ron was saying before. We provide real-time feedback to the driver, and Nadine was saying that that's a really good technology because if you can correct a behavior in real time, they're more often going to do the good behavior instead of the bad. And it provides reports for employee evaluations at the end of the month. One of the things that Nadine asked was how we determine how we're doing, and this was a report that I pulled before I came down or up. In 2006, we had just had a new process put in place. It was a driver reverse button. Anybody that was in reverse had to have a passenger get out, push the button, and make sure that they had somebody back there watching. As you could see, we had about 14,000 unsafe reverses a month at that time. And now, with the help of this technology, we are down to 1,100 unsafe reverses a month, which comes out to about 35 a day. So it really has helped us to graph where we've been and where we're going. So in summary on this, we realize dramatic changes through these three technologies that we're using at Sunstar. We have evidence-based data that we can use now to training and refresher courses, and we're able to identify drivers that fail to align themselves with our safety mission. So... and being that this was all about technology, I thought that this would be a great picture to put up there. Thank you very much.
Charlene, thank you. Great presentation and great use of technology. All right, our final speaker in this section is bringing an international perspective, John Kinane, who's chief of Niagara EMS in Canada. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here. Canada, eh?
Eh?
Eh? Actually, I am Canadian citizen, but I grew up in Manchester, England, so I bring a bit of an international flavor also from the UK. So, first slide, please. Oh, I can use this, right? You going to work for me? Okay, I thought a little about Niagara and where I come from, Niagara EMS. The regional demographics, Niagara, population of around 430,000, 12 municipalities, two-tier government. The Niagara region is about 1,850 square kilometers, which to you folks would be about 1,250 miles, I guess. Ambulance call volume is around 75,000. Our annual mileage is around 2 million, which is, 1,250 1.2 million miles. We staff 26 vehicles at peak with three supervisory vehicles that do first response. So on the next slide. I'm going to talk to you today a little bit about a product called ACETEC. ACETEC is actually was first developed in Ireland, and it's now distributed in Canada by Furno Canada. Very good friends of ours, fantastic corporation to work with, and I'm not just saying that because there's someone from Furno here, but they are a fantastic company. ACETEC is called the Integrated Vehicle Intelligence System. It's a fully integrated vehicle performance monitoring and control system with onboard intelligence. What you can see there over on the right is the actual ACETEC, how it's wired into the system. It's got a numerous safety systems, eco-run module benefits and asset protection benefits, and I'll get into those as we move along. Charlene talked a little bit about speeding infractions. The ACE-TEC system brings to us speeding infractions, unbelted, unsecured occupants, so it gives us a warning if there's any occupant that's unbelted, unseated. Lights and siren compliance, creates driver safety reports, provides feedback to all employees, again, much like your system. And we can set predefined speed limiters. Also gives warnings about hard braking and or rough or hard acceleration. We can also customize much of it. Come on.
Could you advance, please?
Sorry, I think I missed. No, I didn't. I didn't miss one. Okay. I'm going to give you an example of how ACE-TEC and other systems have helped us to solve a significant problem in Niagara. Back in 2010, we had a major, major problem with speeding. And it put up our accident rate, obviously increased our costs. And you can see from this that back in 2010, around May or so, we had over 500 infractions, so that blue line was running up over 500. So that's in excess of 135 kilometers, which is about 85 miles an hour. In August, sorry, you're flipping through them? No. Honest. Hands-free. Hands-free. That was the slide I'm on. Okay? So, 135 kilometers is about 85 kilometers an hour. Sorry, 85 miles an hour. So you can see here in about August of the following year, 2011, we were down to about 280. You'll note we came down even further to the point in 2011 we're down to probably under 50. And you'll see that infractions over 145 kilometers an hour. Again, in the previous year, we were up over, well over 100. You'll see the flat line across the bottom in both red and green. And basically, we really don't have a speeding problem anymore. And we can see, with ACE-TEC, we can see, just like you can with the previous presenter, we can see exactly what's going on. I can bring it up on my BlackBerry. I can bring it up anywhere. It's web-based. We can see exactly what speed they're doing. And again, much like the previous presenter, we can have individual reports and we can have audibles that will warn them, tell them that they're speeding. So, very significant. The significant thing about, I think, about ACE-TEC is that it does two things. It's safety. We call it S&S. It's safety and savings. Our fuel consumption has dropped incredibly. And our costs for repair and maintenance have gone down by about 6 to 8% just in this time period. So significant difference. The other big thing that ACE-TEC does for us is it reduces idle time by using an ecosystem. So it optimizes fuel efficiency and reduces the carbon footprint. It actually reduces idle times by as much as 40% to lower your fuel consumption and costs. Reduces our carbon emissions and contributes to a greener environment. And it also prevents battery failure. By monitoring your battery system, basically what this does is it shuts down, automatically shuts your vehicle down when you're idling. Shuts it down, it maintains your temperature in your battery at a certain level. When that level in your battery systems drops down to a certain level, the vehicle will start up again. So if you idle a lot, this will save you more. Plus, fantastic for emissions. The other thing is, reduces engine wear and reduces your maintenance costs. Certainly extends vehicle life. Your engine hours, a big reduction in engine hours. So, significant savings. And the other, monitoring driver behavior, and you can do that real time. Reduces excessive RPM, and again, reduction in fuel consumption. Show you in a little bit. We've actually been piloting this system for about a year. We only had it in 5 vehicles. Now, what you'll see here is some fairly small savings, about $30,000 a year for what would be our fleet, partly because we didn't have the system automated. What we had was a push button that put the ecosystem on. Now we've just had it, thanks to our friends Furno. They've tweaked it, and we're going to automatic with that, which means it'll be an exception. They'll have to turn it off. So we're projecting savings, fuel savings, about 40%, and total idle time, significant savings on engine hours. We're looking at least $80,000 or 20% of our budget for fuel with this. Next slide. In summary, didn't really have time to get into all the attributes of AceTech, but it also has a fantastic RDIF tagging system. We have tags on our major equipment, such as stretchers, defibs, all our bags, and we know where they are in real time. So it protects our valuable assets. As I said, it reduces engine wear and maintenance costs while extending vehicle life, modifies driver behavior, real-time dashboards, full treated reports, again web-based, and automatic updates on any driving violations. Improve fleet efficiency and operations with remote vehicle diagnostics and real-time fleet management. Track information through web-based interface or integration with established dispatch software. So, again, in 5 minutes, I'm covering what would probably take 2 hours. So we are in the process right now of installing AceTech in all our vehicles. We have about 35 vehicles. What you're seeing here is our latest vehicle. That was delivered a week ago. It's not striped. We have 16 of these coming. They're the Sprinter Type 3, all with having AceTech fitted at the Crestline factory in Saskatoon. And we're expecting to see some significant safety and savings initiatives come from this. So this is a new vehicle for us. If I could I go back to the maybe second slide for a couple of seconds? Keep going. Stop. First slide. This is the interior of the new vehicle. So I just wanted to show you a couple of different safety features. You'll notice the seat, the paramedic seat, is a swivel seat. It swivels always, slides up and down on a track. So this is new for us. This was not allowed in Ontario until probably 3 months ago. And changes in legislation now allow us to have only one seat on that side. And it has several functions. So we have all our equipment in cupboards for ALS on both sides of that sliding track. The track actually slides this way. You can put your hand in and grab your equipment. It slides this way. You put your hand in and grab this way. So, again, these are only being delivered as I speak. So big changes for us. The AceTech system, if you get a chance to have a look at it. It's significant in terms of both safety and savings. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. We're going to hold questions as we move into the next section, if that's okay.